I didn't go to my locker once senior year at all. I just kept a folder in my backpack, and I filled my backpack with more clothes than books. So I just went around to the tables, and every class I'd pull them out, show everybody, and then people just started asking for it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Going Deep with Aaron Watson. My guest today is Frank Augustine. Frank is the founder of an apparel brand called Illegal. He has built it fastidiously over the last 7 years, has learned a lot not only about the production of quality apparel, but also drop culture, running a store, and creating a culturally relevant brand. We talk about how all of that has come together and how he's done it before the age of 25. Frank's gearing up for a big release in his next line for 2021. And we also talk about hustle, influencer marketing, and much, much more. Here is my conversation with Frank Augustine.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
Frank, thanks for coming on the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So you came in, and true to form, you've got the Illegal apparel on.
Yes, sir. All of it.
So tell folks a little bit just about what the company is that you run, how long you've been running it, and maybe if you can articulate a little bit of the brand vision, brand positioning for this company.
For sure. Well, it started 6 years ago. This June will be our seventh. We'll cap our seventh year.
Wow.
And then basically just kind of a clothing brand. We started as a snowboarding. It was centered around snowboarding and skateboarding, like the streetwear culture. And then I met someone, my creative director, Carson Kerr, and we kind of started trying to elevate it into a more high fashion brand because we thought it would allow more growth, allow more opportunities for us. And Illegal, it stands for Be Illegal, is kind of like our slogan, if you want to call it that. And it means to just do whatever you want to do. Be yourself. Go the non-conformist route, like be legal to society, you know, whatever it means to you, whatever you want to do, follow it and go forward. And then last year we started moving into the music industry with just like some studios above our store, some producers, and not managing artists yet, but that's something down the line that we want to take control of. So
very cool. So tell me a little bit about the arc of production. So, you know, you complimented me before we started on like the consistency of producing this show. And I can tell you, I started with like the crappiest little mic and kind of no real production skills. And now we've got the cameras and the multi-setup and all that stuff. And you learn and you iterate. So paint that picture for me with the apparel that you were producing, where it started, how it's grown, where it is now.
Well, it started just t-shirts, just like screen printing t-shirts, just easiest way to
but you were a sophomore in high school, so like where did you even get the screen printing materials? What you know pushed you all the way to take that action?
So it was funny, like me and my brother, I have an older brother, he's 2 years older than me, and I just was never like the school type. I never wanted to be in school at all. I wanted to just like kind of build stuff and create. I've always loved going outside, and it just started with t-shirts and the idea of like Illegal. We probably spent like a cool month thinking of a name. And it was just one time where my brother said it, and then I made the logo, and he was like, wow, that's perfect. And we were all, I think I was 14, he was 16, and then the two other kids that we had involved were 14 and 14.
Wow.
So we were all super young, but we just kind of like didn't expect it to go. It was more of just like talking to just, we were bored, probably just thought of something to just do. And then I was, it was winter, so I caddied at a country club was my only job, so I didn't really have much funding during the winter time, so we were like, all right, let's put it on hold, let's wait until summer so we can get some money from caddying. Summer came around, I was like, you guys still want to do this? They said no, and so I just kind of took the reins myself. And my dad had a landscaping company that he worked for, and he knew a guy that screen printed t-shirts, so I said, can you give me his number? And I called him, and I kind of explained what I wanted to do, and he gave me like he told me the kind of the process, because I didn't even know the process of, you know, burning screens and screen printing. And I never really did any screen printing myself for the first like year or two. I kind of just focused on the business side of it and trying to like learn and get a grasp of things. And so we got some t-shirts ordered, simple design. It's a really silly design, like looking back on it and seeing how far it's came from just like a screen printed logo to an actual constructed garment. So yeah, we got the t-shirts in. I just started selling them in school, and then I was like, I kind of like this. It's kind of fun. People are liking it, and so I just continued doing it.
But so even that, like even that little nugget that you dropped in there of like, oh, just selling them at school, like most people wouldn't know how to do that. Most people wouldn't have either the confidence or the audacity or the capacity to make that happen. So like even...
It definitely took some... Because I think, I was a junior when I really started selling it in school. And the teachers didn't like it at all. Like they didn't like the name illegal. So I did get called down to the office like once or twice for the name illegal and the kids wearing illegal shirts. And I was like, hey, like it's however you want to take it, you take it, but you're taking it the wrong way. So yeah, I don't know. It just definitely took some balls to just go for it and just kind of start. Like I would
like, was it like your locker's open and people are walking by and you're like, hey, you look like you could use a t-shirt.
I didn't go to my locker once senior year.
Okay.
I just kept a folder in my backpack. And that senior year, I kind of like checked out. Like I was like, I'm not going to college. I'm doing this fully. And I filled my backpack with more clothes than books. So I just went around to the tables and every class I'd pull them out, show everybody. And they'd be like, oh, I want a small in that. I'd be like, I'll bring it tomorrow. Bring it tomorrow. And that was just kind of like, then people just started asking for it.
And then so you referenced the interest in the music industry and the kind of the way I think about streetwear, which is not as any sort of expert or anything, is there is a very big degree to which the right person wearing your stuff at the right time can be this massive unlock. And sure, you can kind of run a campaign or you can do this other stuff, but there's so much of a, like, the cosign from this person, the person having it on a certain time. I'd imagine that even plays out in high school where it's like the popular guy or gal, you know, being seen in the illegal brand. It's oh, well, that made it safer to wear. That made it cooler to wear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, cause people follow what they see basically. Yeah. And like, if, you know, a big celebrity wears something like Kylie Jenner, she, you know, crazy influence. If she wore something, it'd probably definitely spike it. But I've heard stories to where it has changed a brand's path and it hasn't changed a brand's path. So it's kind of like an opportunity. Like you could be handed an opportunity, but if you don't act on it or if you don't make the most of it, it's not going to really, it's just kind of be going to be there one day and gone the next.
So would you go in and like manufacture that at all? Like you'd be like, I need to get this on this person to make it happen.
Well, we've been, my creative director, he's like really, like he doesn't want to give just any clothes out to anybody. He doesn't want to give a screen printed t-shirt to say a celebrity because he just doesn't think that like they'll wear it. Because I'm sure they get clothes all the time. You know what I mean?
Course.
They're probably like, oh, what's, you know, throw it to the side. Yeah. But if it's something that you hand them and they're like, oh, wow, this stands out, they're going to wear it more. So we kind of have just been working with like little influencers, but we're waiting for this 2021 collection to gift to a bunch of artists. Like we work with Visionary Records. It's Logic's label.
Okay.
So we're going to try to get some like gear to them and their artists and do some like lookbook shoots with them. So like it can change the path of a brand, but I think it's more of like how the brand structure, because you could get a $100,000 purchase order, but if you don't have the means to fulfill it, then you're going to kind of lost in the sauce.
So let's talk about that then. Cause you were screen printing, you know, via a third party to start things off. Like where's it now?
Well right now. So we're working on a facility over in the Forest Hills. It's been a 6-month project so far, and it's definitely been in over our heads with it. We did not expect a lot of hoops to jump through, but it's going to be a manufacturer. We're going to be embroidering and screen printing ourselves. So we have all the means to make a product and then bulk. We don't have like the budget to pay, you know, 10 or 15 people to make the clothes. So we have to send it off to our overseas suppliers to like fulfill the full order. So we'll make the sample here in the US, fittings, all of that stuff, fabrics, probably from like New York or LA. And then you send it off to, you know, your manufacturer and say, I want it exactly like this. Chances are they're not going to get it right the first time.
Yeah.
So they'll send you another sample, make the adjustments, and then goes through. It never goes as planned. It's like we're still working with our suppliers. We're still figuring out the production process. So yeah.
So another part of that I've come to understand as an outsider is if you're structuring things around drops or you're saying like this line is coming now, there's some degree of projecting that you have to do. I think that 500 people are going to buy this sweater. I think that 5,000, I think that 5, you know, million, and that's a drastically, like even the manufacturer that can fulfill that. But from a pricing standpoint and a cash flow management as the CEO, you have to be kind of threading a needle there in order to make that happen. Can you talk about the relationship between trying to like project that growth, like not getting too big for your britches,
yeah,
and being like, we're going to be everywhere to all people for all things tomorrow.
Yeah.
And kind of like managing that growth rate.
So it's hard. Like we started out with just 24 to like 50 units of everything. And we were at that kind of point for 3 or 4 years, and stuff was selling, but we never had a store until our fourth year of the brand. So it was all online, and our online wasn't really doing much, you know, maybe get an order here and there. So it was kind of hard to like test it with not as much data as I'd like to. But we've come to the point now to where we're ordering 50 to 100 units and we're not getting enough. So we need to, now I'm just kind of like taking the risk and doubling it, and we're getting the most units that we've gotten in the whole lifetime of the brand right now. So I think having a bulk of production or a bulk of products will help you scale easier, because I think you have more money coming in. You know, you have more money to back up on. You say, okay, so we just sold 10 shirts, but we only have 2 left to sell, but we still have to cover these expenses and these expenses. But if you have 100 shirts, you know, you sell 50, you can cover the product cost, all the expenses you need, and then you got 50 left that you can sell and prepare for the next collection.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of like, it's a lot of like testing and just kind of going for it and see what works and what doesn't work.
And is there a degree to which it feels like the I don't know if it's exclusivity, but like having that limited run and being able to almost say like, when we're out, we're out, or when we're out until I can figure out when we get more, is also in some way brand building, because it kind of instigates people to action.
Yeah. And it, that happens a lot too, because we'll do maybe one-offs, or we'll only get 5 just to keep the store looking full.
Yeah.
And they'll go right like that. And then people are like, oh, you coming out with this? I'm like, no, sorry, but maybe. Just keep kind of like looking for us. But that's the thing we've kind of stuck with since day one, is no restocks on anything. Like this shirt I have on, we did one restock of it and that was it. So might come back in 5 years, might come back in 3, might not ever. So it's kind of like, and it will take a minute for people to catch on to that.
Yeah.
And then once they do, they kind of fall in love with it more, you know?
And is Instagram the main place that you interact with the community or the folks that do, you know?
Yeah. Instagram. And I love like in-person stuff. Like that's kind of how the brand was curated. We went to a lot of festivals in the early stages before we had the shop and stuff, which helped put a face to the brand. And I thought that helped a lot of customers kind of relate to something, because we went to a lot of colleges. So it'd be young kids seeing like, oh, it is maybe possible to do something that I want to do and not just take the school route. So
gotcha. So going to those festivals, like buying a table and just same thing, like laying them out, selling them, seeing what people are into.
Yep. And maybe having like a little game. Like we went to Ohio University and we had like a little beer pong game for you to win products. So that was cool to like just something fun more than just focusing on the clothes, because it's an experience at the same time. You know, you don't want, because if you're just promoting your clothes and you're not promoting a message behind the clothes, then people might be attached to the brand, but they're not going to like be loyal to it.
Yeah. And I would also imagine that whether it's the hustle of, you know, having your backpack full of them and laying them out before class, or laying them out on the table at the festival, there's a degree to which that's almost better qualitative feedback than like who clicks on what on your website.
Oh, for sure.
You're seeing someone pick it up and being like, no, or, oh my gosh, I love this. And you potentially even ask them like, well, you know, what's your favorite thing about this, or what, you know, what was wrong with the product?
Yeah. Why did you want to pick that up? And like the website too, cause you don't see a human face. Plus a website could give you like untrusty feelings for something, but like you go into a shop, you meet someone face to face, they can tell you about the brand right there. Like we have an about page, but not everybody's going to go click on that. So it's nice to create a, like a long lasting experience. And I think that's why the shop has helped a lot with like the brand loyalty and people liking the illegal brand.
And I'd imagine there's also a sense of legitimacy too, at least at the margins, like, hey, we have a physical, we've planted a flag here
and
we're invested in this thing meaning something, as opposed to your fly by night operations. Like we're just going to disappear tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I feel like look at it as like a billboard. I feel like a billboard doesn't really get you many leads, but it makes you look established.
Yeah.
It makes you like, oh, they got their sign on a billboard. They're paying big money for that. They're an established brand. So yeah, the store helps with meeting face to face. And I always like to create a relationship with customers, because they're the ones that support you, you know, and if you don't support them, and they're going to be only there for so long.
Yeah. So how's that been affected by COVID and like people obviously not being out as much? How have you kind of rethought the store or, you know, adjusted to that?
Well, we're trying, we closed down obviously like everyone did, and then we opened back up for that little like opening. But we've kind of been like thinking of ideas of like what we could, like what type of like virtual stuff we could put into, like we want to make a virtual retail store on our website. Like you would walk through our store on our website as like a virtual character. But like the store, I don't think retail is going away, but I think it's going to change a lot, like with just the experience of walking in and not just seeing a clothing piece on the rack. It's going to be like there's something I saw online. It was someone in a mirror looking at himself and swiping through clothes.
Yeah.
And that was something I was like, oh, that'd be obviously cost a lot of money to get that kind of technology in there, but it would be something that would make the experience that much more like memorable.
Yeah. And I think that similar to like the beer pong game to, you know, win something, there's also a degree to which if you can tie that into experiences, like I'm not just going into this store to buy this thing. I'm going there because there's great music or there's some other component to the experience that I can't get online. Because I can, like if I just want that hoodie, I can go click, 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 and
it's there at your door. Yeah.
Get the hoodie in the next couple days or weeks. But to be able to go in and have that experience is really what those spaces have to be about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like online's good to reach like a big web of customers, but in store is much better, like you said, to like kind of give something maybe a week down the road, they see something and it clicks in their mind. They're like, oh, that reminds me of Illegal.
Yeah.
I might go buy a hoodie now or something, you know, something like more than just the clothes, like more than just like a cupcake. You want the whole cake.
Absolutely. So when you go through the drops of these different lines, is it primarily marketed through Instagram? Like I saw that there was email collection on your website. Like how are you thinking about, you know, basically putting up the siren and being like, yo, there's new stuff here.
Yeah.
I saw there's Black Friday. Obviously, everyone does something on Black Friday. But how do you think about that?
Well, we try to structure it through videos and like kind of a campaign style video. And like this collection coming up is going to be our biggest collection that we're going to release. So we're going to kind of have a 3-part video series, and then we'll create ads from those videos and run those on Instagram and Facebook. And then influencer marketing is going to be a huge part of our campaign too. So we have kind of like 20 to 30 high ticket celebrities that we're going to send like packages to. If they take a picture, great. If they don't, if someone else in their crew does, awesome. But yeah, we don't try to spend much on like marketing money, more of like content creation money. So
yeah.
We want to buy stuff for our sets and buy stuff for actors and hire more models to wear our stuff, go to cooler locations to shoot. And I think you create higher quality content. It's instead of putting, you know, $1,000 to an ad, you could put $500 to video production and only, you know, $500 to the ad. And then you make it that much more, I think, what's the word for it? Effective.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we try to like keep it on Instagram and Facebook. Is texting, like SMS marketing, we're kind of straying away from email just because I think our demographic doesn't really use email that much or doesn't know how to use email that much.
Yeah.
We definitely send it out still, but we get way more traffic on texts.
Well, it also makes sense because like the email has the promotions filter and all these other things where it's like it just kind of feels
like the
other
spam box and
marketing
and that
email
stuff
that I got.
Yeah.
But the text is very different. What about, so when you think about these influencers, you referenced like a connection with a specific label that Logic's involved with, but like is there another lens or way that you're evaluating who this, like obviously it's just like, okay, this person like moves product, so like that's always who you'd want to be associated with, but are there other elements that you're thinking about, like an identity, right? It's a lifestyle brand, it has, you know, origins back in snowboarding and music. Like how are you filtering that, because you do have, you know, limited wares to send out in those packages, you have limited capacity to get on different people's radar?
Well, we kind of start, like I always DM them, like it's usually through like an Instagram DM. You just kind of send 50 out a day, maybe get one back or something like that, and you can kind of tell like how the person's reacting. Like if they're just like, yeah, send large, and it's like, all right, I'm not gonna send anything because you just said send large. But if like, you know, some people will message back and be like, oh dude, this stuff is awesome, like send me pictures, I'll pick what I want, and they're like, oh, okay, this person's actually kind of interested. And then you might have to take an L on the first one if they don't do anything with the first package, but you kind of play it off. Like I said, like throwing stuff at the wall and see if it sticks with influencers, because texting isn't, or like DMing doesn't really show their personality that much, and you know, they could still just be trying to like get the attention from the brand and feel all cool because the brand's reaching out to send some free stuff. So you kind of gotta be aware of who's gonna actually support it and who's just there for to just get free clothes and not do anything with it.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that there's also, at least the way I would think about it is, if there is the character, like, hey, they posted about it, and like the next 48 hours are like our best 48 hours.
See, that's the big, that's what you want to look for.
That's what you're looking for. But then at the same time, it's like that's where you double down. That's where you're like, okay, like here's another another thing. Like just go and go and go, because there's not only impact on their end, but if that also ties into like a genuine, authentic like for the thing, mm-hmm. then that has the potential to have a long arc, a long impact on what
you
guys are
doing. They can do more than just wear the clothes, you know, because someone of that, like whatever caliber they're at, they know other people that could help, whether it's a celebrity to wear our stuff or someone that knows a supplier in Singapore that could connect us with a clothing manufacturer, or someone who knows someone in LA with a fabric shop. Or there's a bunch of different opportunities to like take advantage of in that scenario, for sure.
Yeah. So the other thing that I really wanted to ask you about was, obviously a couple of those 14-year-olds were like, the idea was just thrown together the first time. They flaked out because that's what 14-year-olds might be likely to do. But at the same time, like you've built a team and you've built community and you've built real interest around this idea as the person who is the founder, as the person who is really kind of crafting something that is culturally relevant. So I kind of compare it from like my purview. Someone else builds a B2B software, and like it really doesn't matter if it's resonant culturally to people. It just kind of needs to like check the box on function A and function B,
yeah,
and like get that job done. So I'm what I'm super curious about is your ability, not just even necessarily to, you know, sell these shirts at a festival or, you know, get those loyal followers to these accounts, but to get people who want to be associated with working at a small company like this. Because the truth is that you can't compete with a Nike salary. You can't compete
type
of companies when it's in this stage of the game. So to some degree, you're not just selling the person who wants to wear it on their body and have it look good, but you're selling the people who are like, I want to be a part of this because I see where it could be.
Yeah.
And like, you know, being a part of something like this in the early stages could be meaningful, and I believe in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think leading by example is a big thing to get people attached to something. Like I act like someone's filming me all day. Like I'm like, okay, someone's filming me and my kids are going to see this in 30 years from now. Like, well, they don't want to see me just sitting on the couch watching TV, chilling, eating chips. You know, I want lead by example and inspire the next person who's coming into the shop. Or if it's like a little photographer, you know, show them that you're not just like, I'm not just doing it because I think it's cool to be a clothing brand owner. Like I'm doing it because I actually want to see growth from this, and I actually want it to benefit not just me, but my family, the people that work for it, the people that believed in me from day one. So it's more of just like, oh, let's get some t-shirts. It's more of like, okay, let's have meetings, let's talk, let's be open to each other, let's take accountability for our mistakes, and just work hard, just not stop.
Right on.
So
tell me about the trademark. Tell me about like when you realized that was a move that needed to be made.
Year four or five.
So yeah.
I just kind of like did it and was hoping no one would take the brand. And I'm still like kind of struggling with the fully trademarking the illegal name, because it's kind of like trademarking red.
Yeah, that was kind of wild that it was even...
It's a very broad term. So we have Illegal Apparel Co.
Okay.
trademarked, but we're trying to stay away from having apparel after the illegal name, because it limits, I feel like it's like Apple and Apple computers when they change to just Apple, you know, they're not just in computers anymore. They're everywhere.
So what I actually thought of as I was looking at it and kind of, you know, hearing some of the interviews that you've done, kind of seeing like the idea of, you know, we want to get into illegal music, and there's a very kind of clear and apparent brand positioning there that would fit together. Like your artists wear the clothes, mm-hmm. You listen to the music in the store when you're buying the clothes, so on and so forth. It actually really made me think of Virgin. So like Virgin is now a galactic company and has had a cola and had a railroad, but it started with Branson selling a music magazine.
Yeah.
And then that turned into a record label. And so on and so forth down the line. But to me, it was like a similar idea where Virgin was a word that like most companies wouldn't be like, trying to own that word specifically, if that makes sense. But as he built and compounded over decades, the relevance of that, it started to build the flexibility to move out into those other things. And I did kind of see that with illegal, where it's like, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want my like security, cybersecurity firm to be called illegal.
Yeah, no, definitely. It doesn't make sense.
but it fits. And if you think about, you know, if the beachhead is youth culture, streetwear, that like high cultural relevance, that as a muscle that you can build when it starts to become something you can point on to the areas becomes so much more powerful than like your B2B software company trying to like start to sell you sneakers. Like it's probably not going to happen.
It's probably not going to work. Yeah. I think because I did contemplate like changing the name or like thinking about changing the name, because it was actually when my principal called me down to the office because like this one kid was making fun of the brand or whatever. And then he, long story. So I went down there and he was like, "You have a company?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's called Illegal." He's like, "Oh, I've been seeing people wearing that. You ever thought about changing the name?" I'm like, "No, not really." And then like after I left his office, I was like, "Should I change the name or no?" And then I was just like, "Nah, screw it. I'm gonna go for it." And hope it's now catching on. So I think still people, some make jokes, are like, "Oh, is it illegal to be in there?" And it's like, "Oh, I haven't heard that one before."
Yeah.
So kind of just gotta take it with a grain of salt and see how people react.
Well, if it gives them something to talk about. And I would also say, like, I probably wouldn't go to a school principal for like brand building.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, yeah, it's like questions you see an illegal sticker on a store in Southside. You're like, "Huh, what's going on?" You know, but then when you come in and meet us or the team, it's a lot different. Their whole mind shifts. Like we've had, you know, 80-year-olds and 70-year-olds come in and buy a shirt, and we've had 13-year-old like moms buy their daughters beanies and t-shirts. So it's kind of like some people might not take it, but it's not for everybody. That's the fun part about it, you know. It's like everything. There's going to be people that support you. You just have to work hard until those people come around.
Makes sense. So in terms of team composition, you talked about the creative director. Obviously, I can imagine the influence that would have on, you know, clothing design and graphics and whatnot. But what other roles are there to be filled in terms of running the ship?
So we have, I have my partner who recently just came out. Like, we've had a set team for the past like year and a half. It's kind of been like people coming and going. But over the past year and a half, it's been like a pretty concrete team with Zach I don't even know how to say his last. I just call him Taps is his nickname, but he's my buddy. He's the president of the company, and he does a lot of video production work because he started with like music videos and stuff like that, but now he's wants to create like real cinemas with the clothing and all that stuff. Then we have the producers, Joey Tucci, Slick LaFleur, and Duddy are the producers that work above the store, and they run the studios. And then our facility that we're opening up, there's some other companies in there. Sean and Vin Deasy is his nickname, and he's a creative, like a clothing maker too. He does embroidery stuff. So it's kind of like everyone fits their role, but everyone has their like own little company that they want to do and want to kind of grow. So.
Gotcha. And with the production, is that like pay for studio time? Is that the business model there? Or?
Pretty much, yeah. Like we, it was just like a studio apartment, and we had a contractor come in and build the first booth, and then during quarantine, I built the second room up there, and we just
gotcha.
Have three producers, and they just people DM them whatever, say, "Hey, I want an hour, I want three." It's like, "All right, come on in," and then we got a booth with a microphone, and we just record. No live instruments yet, but that's common for sure.
Lay down some vocals.
Yeah, exactly. Come lay down some vocals. We like all of our producers make beats and stuff, so they can give beats out. And the one Slick LaFleur, he's pretty recognized in the industry with his music. He's worked with a lot of people that have some like number one chart on Apple Music. So it's cool. It's cool to see.
Awesome. Well, I want to make sure that folks can check it out and learn more about all the stuff you guys are up to. What digital coordinates can we provide people that want to learn more about Illegal?
So Illegal's Instagram is Illegal Apparel Co. Illegal Music Group is the music Instagram. We also have my Instagram's Illegal Og, and we're doing the build. It's called like a weekly. We're trying to drop it weekly, but it's very inconsistent right now. We have about four or five episodes out, and that's going to be hopefully an ongoing thing 5 years from now. I just kind of want to show people, not every move, but, you know, what we've made wrong or, like, what mistakes, just the build and the rebuild of the brand. Show people that, like, you just got to go try it.
What's the big mistake if you look back on the first 6 years of Illegal that you're like, man, if I could have just learned this lesson 2 years sooner, that would have been a game changer?
Money management, for sure. Okay. For sure. For sure. Because, I mean, I'm still not, like, a professional at it, but I try to, you know, check my have balance sheets and track all my expenses. But beforehand, I was just kind of spending money and being like, oh, I have enough in my bank account. All right, let's buy it. And it's like, no, you gotta predict for the end of the month, beginning of the month, end of the year, quarter, all of that stuff. So just never stop learning is like what I would tell myself. Is just try to learn something new every day about the business.
Yeah, I got a story on that front that listeners have heard enough that I'm not going to repeat now, but we'll do it after the recording because there's good stuff in there. But that is excellent. We're going to link all that in the show notes. It's in the podcast app where people are probably listening to this right now, or at goingdeepwithaaron.com/podcast for every single episode of the show. Before we let Frank go, though, I want to give him the mic one final time to issue an actionable personal challenge to the audience.
Okay. So I was thinking about this, and I think if for the next, like a 30-day challenge kind of thing, and it's structured around PMA, positive mental attitude.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of Earl Nightingale?
I have not.
Definitely watch every single piece of content that he's put out. He's way back in the day, because you can tell by like the way he kind of does his recordings. He talks about like just like old stuff. Like he doesn't talk about the cell phone at all. He doesn't talk about the computer at all. But he talks about your mind and how like powerful it is with the gold mine between your ears. So I challenge everybody to like wake up every day on like a positive note. And if you're not positive, start thanking God for stuff. Being grateful is like the easiest way, I feel like, to get out of depression or a sad state. So just look around and just anything you see, like, thank you for this water or whatever. Think this podcast, meeting you, you know, stuff like that. Like, just be grateful, be positive, and take every step aware of what's going on around you. Just and lift your head up and know that better things are coming, you know, because people, I feel like, get too down on themselves or doubt themselves too many times. And it's sad to see.
Absolutely. And I think that framework for thinking about things it's hard for me to piece apart, but in terms of being drawn to do something more entrepreneurial and like having that attitude basically be necessary in order to find any sort of success, like that, people will talk about like the overly optimistic entrepreneur who, like you said, like you always think there's going to be more demand and you're more, you know, expecting of the future run. There's like the extreme caricature that's divorced from reality and just like completely up in la la land, like not aware of anything. But then there's also just the deep pragmatism to people like being around people that are more optimistic. Mm-hmm. People tend to follow a leader that has a kind of more optimistic view of the future. If you're just pure doom and gloom, at some point that wears you down and gets people going to be sick of it. Yeah. So I think that's a deeply practical, and I'd not heard of Earl Nightingale before, so I learned another thing.
Yeah, and it's like if you have to think either way, right?
Yeah.
So why not think positive? Because no one's smart enough to be wrong and no one's smart enough to be right about future things. So it's, you kind of just got to pick what side you want to do. And you'll start seeing, like, trust me, like start, you know, saying, instead of saying, I will, I am, you know, it's kind of like just little things. And if, you know, if a car stops in front of you, get road rage, just take a deep breath and be positive, because you get out what you get in what you put out. So that's a basic thing I live my life by.
Amen. Well, that's a beautiful note to wrap up on.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm excited. This was good for sure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. We just went deep with Frank Augustine. Hope everyone out there has a fantastic day. Hey, thank you so much for listening to the end of my conversation with Frank. If you enjoyed this, make sure you check out our recent past episode with Will DeZombach, the manager for Wiz Khalifa. We talk about music management, marketing, hip-hop, and their new Cloud Kitchens concept, Hotbox by Wiz. Many more great conversations coming soon, including a conversation about the oil and gas industry with Mark Marmo.
Yeah, so our two main basins right now are the Marcellus and the Utica, which are Ohio, PA, West Virginia. We're in the Permian, which is Texas, New Mexico. We will be working in the Bakken, which is North Dakota, in January. So we're going to have a presence there. That'll be a new area. We are working in Argentina. So we're working with YPF, the national company of Argentina. We have the only unit of its kind in Argentina right now. We'll be training their people down there to run the equipment probably for 1 to 2 years. And then most likely we'll have two operations in the Mideast by the end of next year.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.